Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
On October 19th, the Norris Group proudly presented I Survived Real Estate 2012. An incredible lineup of industry experts joined Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and the outlook for real estate in the coming year. Over $77,000 was raised to benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners. Foreclosure Radar, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, the Investors Workshops, Invest Club for Women, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association, Fry Wiles, MVT Productions, and White House Catering. Learn more about the panel and how to attend at isurvivedrealestate.com.
As an economist, do you feel that we've passed the bottom of the housing market and now we're on an upswing that's sustainable?
Well, we haven't called the bottom. What I do think with what we're seeing in the data, and we're seeing it pretty broadly across the country, is the return of a seasonal pattern where we had a really good spring in terms of not only house prices, but also days on market. Many markets are returning back to a very healthy situation in terms of supply and demand. The reason I'm a little hesitant to say that, you know, we're definitely past the bottom goes with the fact that, you know, prices are currently being supported by incredibly low interest rates and the federal government having a huge involvement in supporting credit. So,
can you just promise to keep them there for a while?
Again? Okay. You can't promise that?
Fortunately, I can't promise anything.
What would be your expectations
on that, though? Do you think that interest rates are likely to remain reasonably where they are for a while?
That is our current view and forecast for the next few years, that mortgage rates will stay around where they are with a little bit of an uptick over time as the economy improves. I mean, the Federal Reserve has been very clear that they will keep interest rates low for as long as they think they need to, and they've backed that up with immense purchases of MBS. So that's currently a forecast.
What were the positives that got us off the bottom to this point?
You know, I think it's a combination of things. One thing is that markets actually work after a while. You know, we had prices came down 30%, and people looked at it and said, you know, at that price, maybe I'll stop renting and I'll buy. You know, we've also had employment is improving. It's not back to where one would want it to be, but there has been some improvement. And I think those two things have helped immensely, along with low interest rates.
Do you feel that the improvement in the market was driven by real forces or mostly by policy decisions, would you say?
Well, we're in a period of unprecedented policy intervention, but I think that when, you know, individuals look at the price of a house and look at interest rates and, you know, take on the commitment to own a home or to buy an investment property, you know, those are real decisions.
When you do research, and what if you came up with a scenario that you go, wow, this is significant, and you told that to Fannie Mae, would they sometimes implement new policies based on now their expectations on their own? In other words, this is definitely moving forward, or maybe in 2005 telling them, we got to be very careful, this is dangerous. Who do they listen to, and how quickly does it get the policy?
Sure. We're fortunate in our group, in the economics and strategy group, we have a terrific management team that does listen to a lot of the research we do. You know, it's a battleship-sized organization, right? Our balance sheet is a $3 trillion balance sheet. We're in conservatorship. The conservator is ultimately responsible for guarding taxpayer money. So, you know, things move slowly and judiciously and you know, with care. But, you know, I do think at least everybody I've met over the 3 years I've been there is very conscious of trying to make data-driven decisions and trying to make the best decisions they can.
Do you think you could put a good word in for investors to bump that number of loans that are available? You're here. I had to ask.
No, it's a terrific question. And if you spoke to our REO operation in Dallas and the people who run that, they love individual investors. I mean, we disposed of, you know, I think at the height, we probably had about 180,000 homes in inventory. We were taking in maybe 14, 15,000 a month, selling that many. And, you know, we get terrific execution from new homeowners and from individual investors. So at least within the company, I think we very much appreciate investors.
All right. Well, I appreciate being appreciated. We would love another friend back there saying, you got to give those guys 20 loans instead of whatever they have. Eric, I'm going to direct some questions to you.
Sure.
One of the things that I really respect about Eric, there's a few things that he's kind of called that you have an appreciation about the process that he must believe in, that it removes emotion away from the decision. So in a stock market that went crazy in the 90s, when you tell your investors that follow you that you would exit like by the end of 1999 or early 2000, that was a nice thing to know. Buying gold at 270 and never selling it. The one that just is amazing is I have a friend that has silver and a lot of it, and I got an email because I signed up for his website, and he just told everybody just out of the blue, really, because you had the silver from probably the same time frame as the gold. So years into the purchase, I mean, he just sends an email, I'm selling all my silver. So I forwarded that to my friend. I said, Alex, I would take this guy seriously. He's got a pretty good track record of picking tops and bottoms. And my friend said, nah, it's going to 100. And about 3 days later, it was about 30-something. And so but I appreciate the process, okay? Now, what scares me about my respect of your process is you disagree with my real estate conclusions. But, you know, that's kind of why we're here. We're not here to pat me on the back or predict anything. I really want to understand why really well-meaning, educated people come to different conclusions sometimes, okay? So this is one of your quotes. To lay out my model for the rate and duration of the decline, which I have determined to be 10 to 15 years from 2005, depending on the form and extent of government intervention in the market. When did you make that statement first?
2004.
2004, yeah. Okay. Has the extent of government intervention surprised you?
Yes. I think Mark put it, if anything, you understated it to say it was unprecedented government intervention in the market.
Okay. And you were surprised, by very little, but QE3 was one of them.
Well, QE3 was interesting because it was specifically focused on buying mortgage-backed securities. So all the other quantitative easing before that was both treasury bonds and mortgage-backed securities. So this was a directed specifically at the housing industry.
Okay. And so what will be the effect for the housing industry on that policy?
Well, I think it'll be, you know, positive. So what Bernanke has been trying to do, and this is standard economic theory, is reinflate asset prices, financial assets. If you look at household balance sheets, and there's a document that the Fed puts out every quarter called the Fed Flow of Funds, and it measures household worth, measures two things, financial assets and tangible assets. Tangible assets are a small portion of it. It's basically housing value, 90% of it. The other 10% is like your refrigerator and stuff like that. But the financial assets are stocks and bonds and portfolio assets, and those are back to where they were before the crisis. So QE, in his view, has been successful in reflating those because standard theory is that if you can increase household net worth, it has a positive wealth effect, and that moves the aggregate demand curve up and improves the economy. So that has been successful insofar as it was that's what it was intended to do.
Do you mostly agree or disagree with my opening remarks then?
Well, Bruce, I agree with everything you're saying about your market here. I'm no expert on your regional market. I'm more of a macro guy.
Okay.
So my concerns are more macroeconomic. So, you know, in terms of the housing market nationally, If you think about, you know, a housing bubble or any kind of bubble is a process. It's not an event. It takes a housing bubble in particular took a long time to unfold. In my view, it started in the mid-1990s. It really took off around 2002 with some extraordinary intervention by the Federal Reserve, which really caused it to take off until it crashed in 2006. So this has been a very long period of time, I would say from 1998 until now, when there hasn't been what I would generally consider to be a market price for real estate in the United States. It's been distorted one way or the other by government intervention. So trying to figure out, for an average person, trying to figure out what the price of real estate should be, whether it's here or in Boston or in Ohio, is a little bit like being in a casino for 2 weeks and trying to figure out what time it is.
I just want to mention, I need to know the time that we've been up here. I lost track of that, and I don't want to go too much into this and eliminate other people from having their time. How important is housing to an economic recovery for the U.S.?
Well, we've never had a sustained recovery from a recession without housing recovering first since since the 1960s. That's always been the pattern.
And how subservient is real estate in the United States to things outside of our country? In other words, let's say Europe ends up having a pretty nasty recession again. And by the way, correct me if you think they're not going to have a recession. But if they have a recession, what are the ramifications for not just the United States, but real estate in the United States?
Well, let me get back to the reason why real estate leads recoveries or has in the past. So, a recession is technically just a period of time when the economy is shrinking. So it's negative GDP growth. And what it creates is what's called an output gap, a gap between potential GDP and the actual GDP. And in all recessions in most of our lifetimes, that's always closed within a relatively short period of time. Even during the very large recessions that we had in the early 1980s, it closed in 1 year, from about 7.5% of GDP to zero in 1 year. A very rapid recovery. The great, so-called Great Recession produced an output gap of almost about the same amount, about 7.7% of GDP, but it hasn't really closed at all. It's still 7.5. So it stayed parallel. And this gets back to the question of why traditionally, real estate has always been regional, prices are regional, and how we knew that we were getting a housing bubble. When I started writing about the bubble in 2002, the signature event was a divergence of housing prices from regional incomes. It's logical that regional home prices should be correlated to regional incomes because you're going to buy a house within about 30 miles of your commute, and you're going to pay the mortgage you can afford based on your income. And so that's why housing prices tend to be regional. When they diverge, something is inflating prices beyond what normally incomes would support. So when you tell me that you're seeing prices go up, but employment isn't going up, there's some other factor besides normal market factors driving it. And then that raises the question, will that continue?
Yes.
Right?
I was trying to get that out of Fannie Mae, but my goodness,
he
wouldn't come up with it.
He wasn't trying to say anything, right? So the one thing I would add to what was just said is that the other interesting phenomenon you get is large differences across the country based on, you know, the elasticity of supply, which we're going to choke on that word. But what does that mean? The ability of builders to build the moment demand picks up. So if you look at the boom and the bust on the coasts and areas where there's geographic limitations and then politically imposed limitations through zoning, the moment incomes start to go up and credit loosens, you see prices start to move up. If you go to Plano, Texas, just to pick one example, where there's a lot of land and it's developer-friendly, you just don't get the same boom-bust cycle that you get, for example, in Manhattan or San Francisco. And I don't know how the counties here would compare on how difficult it is to add to the supply. That's definitely going to be a factor that's affecting the differences in regional performance.
I think for right now, we'll go ahead and just say thank you, and we'll have you back up here in a little bit. Mark Palem and Eric Jensen, thank you very much. If we could have Sarah Stevens. Sarah is the 2012 president of the Appraisal Institute. She serves on the organization's board of directors, on its executive committee. She's been active in the Appraisal Institute's all the regions and chapters and so forth for about 20 years. So, Sarah, thank you and welcome back. We're joined also again by Gary Thomas, the president-elect for National Association of Realtors. He's been in the business for more than 35 years and has served the industry in countless ways. Gary, welcome again. And also E.J. Burke, the vice chairman of the Mortgage Bankers Association. E.J. Burke is executive vice president and group head of KeyBank Real Estate Capital and KeyBank's corporate bank with responsibilities for real estate capital. So for the first time, we welcome E.J. Sarah, I have an appraiser that works for our – he's independent. Guess I better make that clear, huh? But he wrote me kind of a referral letter in the sense that he's always been impressed that we didn't do what was typical when we request an appraisal. And I'm going to read part of that letter because it really leads to why we have to deal with so many regulations that maybe could have been avoided. And this is his letter. It says, I've been an appraiser since 1988. In those 24 years, I've done 14,000 appraisals. As an appraiser, my job is to protect the lender's investment. If a loan officer is involved, their job is to get a loan funded. If there's a real estate agent involved, it's their job to get the house sold. If it's a refinance, the borrower's concern is to get the new loan. If it's a divorce situation, the owner that's buying out the other partner wants the appraisal low, the other wants it high. If it's a short sale, the realtor wants the appraisal below market. If it's a private sale, the owner wants the appraisal above market. The buyer wants it below market. In over 99% of the 14,000 appraisals, there has been pressure from owners, realtors, buyers, sellers, loan officers, and attorneys to get the appraisal value at a number that's best to meet their needs. And Sarah, do you find that is true? That is reflecting the reality of the appraisal world?
Well, I think that's true. And I jokingly said to somebody at the table as we were thinking about tonight that if we send an appraisal to somebody and they don't call and complain, my first thought is it's too high. the pressure on appraisers is enormous. We are reporting the market. That's what we do. And it's really, really difficult for people to understand that we are an unbiased third party. And that's what we're there for. We're there to protect the public trust. We're there to provide our expertise. And we're there to investigate the market and report it. And that's really our job and our function.
EJ, as far as the lender side, do you agree with the pressure that not only exists from let's say, the mortgage broker to appraiser, but from client to the mortgage broker?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, here's a good question. Is there anything in place Gary, how about realtors, too, as far as just that it's common for realtors to put pressure on appraisal? You know, we're talking amongst friends here.
Oh, never.
Those realtors are perfectly good. I forgot.
Absolutely, every time.
Well, okay, we kid about it, but you know what? We've landed in quite a mess because some of our greed, whatever you want to call it, wasn't reined in by ourselves. And a question is there anything in either the mortgage industry or the realtor industry that says leave the appraiser alone? Is that coming from the leadership down? Or, you know, I'm just curious.
No, I think, you know, what we want is fair appraisals, you know, in any market. You know, you alluded to the market moving up. That's problematic for us getting the appraisals right as we move out of the trough. It has been every time we've gone through a recession. So we live with that, you know, and, of course, we blame the appraiser because, you know, they're conservative in what they're doing. They have to be at this point in time. So you know, we understand it. Do we like it? No, but we understand it.
Okay. Again, from the mortgage industry, is there any rules that say, you know what, don't do that anymore?
Well, for regulated institutions, you remember when we had the last big real estate crisis, the S&L debacle? That gave us FIREA, which was the little brother to Dodd-Frank. And under FIREA, by regulation, by law, we have to separate ordering the appraisal, reviewing the appraisal from the lending process. So it's, for instance, in my institution, it's ordered by the risk people and it's reviewed by the risk people. And we are not allowed to talk to the appraiser.
So it sounds like we had some mechanism in place, but it didn't work necessarily.
Well, remember, I'm saying this isn't the case of a regulated institution.
Okay.
So the mortgage market hasn't always been regulated.
Okay.
I think certainly the banks made plenty of mistakes. So it just goes to show that you can't rely on simply an appraisal to make a loan.
You can't rely on what now?
You can't rely solely on an appraisal to make your lending decision. You have to rely on, there are a number of other factors that are going to determine whether somebody gets paid back or not.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about the appraisal management companies. Designed to provide a barrier between the appraiser and the rest of the participants, the goal being appraiser independence. Has that occurred?
I think to some degree it has. I think that one of the big problems we're seeing from the AMCs and their emergence into the world of appraisal, obviously they were set up and put together to provide that firewall between the lender and the purchaser. The idea is a good one, but unfortunately what's happened is in a lot of instances, and not all of them, but in a lot of instances, the mantra of the AMC seems to be cheap and quick. And what we're seeing is that we're sacrificing the ability of an appraiser who is local, with local expertise, with understanding of the market, with the ability to investigate and put together an appraisal that is accurate for a specific part of the market that person works in, being negated by the insistence that the fee be very low and the timing be very quick. We're seeing a lot of people who are traveling into markets 200, 300, 400 miles, who come in, make an inspection, gather up what they can on the quick, go home, do the appraisal, and it's turned in 24, 36 hours. And, you know, for all of us, that single-family dwelling is probably the most important financial decision that we'll make. And having some kind of support for that financial decision is extremely important. And having a qualified, educated appraiser work on that appraisal, someone who's local, someone who has expertise in the market, someone who understands what's going on in the market is key to helping consumers make that decision and to shoring up the process that we now have ongoing.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, California Property Solvers, Coldwell Banker Pioneer Real Estate, Elite Auctions, For Investors by Investors, In a Day Development, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Investor Experts Incorporated, Keller Williams of Corona, Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, Lievis Associates, Mike Cantu, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Northern San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Pilot Limo, Realty 411 Magazine, Real Wealth Network, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Southwest Riverside County Association of Realtors, John Reisinger Photography, Sonoka Corporation, Spinnaker Loans, UDirect IRA, Wilson Investment Properties, Tony Alvarez, Weston South Coast Plaza, and Winning in Tough Times LLC. See isurvivedrealestate.com for the video from the live event.